It's not something they'd like to refer to, but in his case, he was asked a question and he replied.
China's defense minister makes rare comments on Tiananmen Square. It's Monday, June 3rd. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, the acting U.S. defense secretary is in Asia. Weather adds to the trade pinch on U.S. farmers. Fewer Chinese visit the United States. Trump's immigration overhaul and Ramadan in Alaska. It's all on today's VOA Asia. China on Sunday defended its deadly crackdown 30 years ago on pro-democracy protesters in Beijing's Tiananmen Square, saying it was the correct policy. Defense Minister Wei Fenghe, in answering a question posed at a conference in Singapore, said there was a conclusion to that incident. That was a political turmoil that the central government needed to quell. The government was decisive in stopping the turbulence. That was the correct policy. Wei's defense of the Chinese government's brutal treatment of the protesters was a rare acknowledgment of the June 4, 1989 incident that occurred after 7 weeks of demonstrations by students and workers demanding democratic change and the end of corruption. Government soldiers and tanks chased and killed hundreds of protesters, possibly more than 1,000, although the exact number of deaths remains unknown. Wei questioned why critics still say that China did not handle the incident properly. The 30 years have proven that China has undergone major changes, he said. Wei said that because of Beijing's response at the time, China has enjoyed stability and development. VOA Asia's Ira Melman managed to get in touch with Orville Schell, director of U.S.-China relations at the Asia Society, at the airport as he was preparing to board a flight, and he asked Schell if other Chinese officials had talked about what happened 30 years ago in Beijing.
Well, I mean, officials have talked about it, and they have put it in the context of the need to maintain stability, as the Secretary of Defense, what Wei did in Singapore. It's not something they'd like to refer to, but in his case, he was asked a question and he replied.
Will any of this, that information or that question reach the ears of Chinese people?
I would think that particular exchange would not.
Why do you think he decided to answer the question if he knew that the government was taking such a hard stand against dissemination of such information?
Well, I suspect what happened was that he gave a speech and then was scheduled to answer questions, and that was the first question that popped up. I don't think that he chose it, but he couldn't eschew answering it, I think, once it was posed.
All right, now, this is the 30th anniversary coming up of Tiananmen Square. Do you expect any changes whatsoever in the future from the Chinese government as to how it communicates what happened or did not?
No, I think that the Chinese Communist Party is dedicated to sort of erasing this particular incident. It was embarrassing, and it was very unsettling from the historical record to the best of their ability.
I'm seeing this in your mind as not the biggest story in the world, right?
Well, I think the story is the real tragedy of June 4th was not simply the bloodshed, but that it ended China's ability to feel comfortable with any kinds of political reform. And we are seeing the consequences of that continuing to play out today.
Do you think that Xi Jinping has healed any situation whatsoever or made it worse?
I think he tends to be more dependent on control than some of his predecessors. And I think he is more of a Leninist than either Hu Jintao or Jiang Zemin, who preceded him.
Inside China, online censors have scrubbed mention of the Tiananmen crackdown from social media, removing articles, comments, and pictures. Discussions of the suppression of the protests is taboo in China, with authorities warning and rounding up activists, lawyers, and journalists each year as the anniversary approaches. The These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit online at voanews.com. China blames Washington for trade talks breakdown. Acting U.S. defense chief criticizes China's bad behavior. Defense minister says China to fight to the end to reunify with Taiwan. Thailand toughens rape laws. Australia probes crystal meth epidemic. Expanded coverage of all these stories and a whole lot more can be found each and every day on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Since the first day Acting Defense Secretary Pat Shanahan took the reins of the Pentagon, he said that his top concern is China, China, China. And in his first major appearance in Asia as the U.S. military's civilian chief, he did not shy away from criticizing Beijing's bad behavior. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has more from Singapore.
Acting Defense Secretary Pat Shanahan was all smiles ahead of a meeting with his Chinese counterpart that focused on building relations. But speaking to an audience at the annual Shangri-La Defense Forum, Shanahan said the U.S. would not ignore Chinese behavior, which he says has threatened prosperity in the region.
It's not about conflict. It's not about building walls. This is about security.
China is infamous for its theft of other nations' military and civilian technology.
I don't like when intellectual property is stolen. We have real issues with intellectual property theft, cyber attacks. There's a host of issues that we have to address.
Experts say China has used this theft to narrow the gap between some critical American and Chinese military abilities. Michael O'Hanlon is a defense analyst with the Brookings Institution.
The kind of advantage that we had against China in the Western Pacific during the Cold War is gone for good.
And China has continued to project more military power beyond its borders, most notably by constructing artificial islands in the South China Sea and placing heavy weapons on them to support territorial claims not recognized under international law.
They argue that it's defensive. It looks like it's a bit overkill.
Recently, the U.S. has pushed for more international patrols in the South China Sea, including one last month with Japan, India, and the Philippines. Bradley Bowman is with the Foundation for Defense of Democracies.
I think we need to do more of that because I think we need to characterize this conflict for what it is. It's not a conflict between China and the U.S. It's a conflict between China and the world.
U.S. allies here in Singapore were increasingly anxious over rising tensions between the two powers. And as one leader pointed out, many believe China and the U.S. need to work together or they risk upending the global system. Carla Babb, VOA News, Singapore.
Happening now in Asia, China has increased tariffs on billions of dollars worth of U.S. goods as it prepares to unveil a blacklist of unreliable foreign companies said to punish U.S. and foreign firms cutting off supplies to telecoms giant Huawei. The U.S. and China have exchanged tariffs on $360 billion in two-way trade so far. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us today as we begin a brand new week on VOA Asia. Continued rainfall across the Midwest this spring has extended a trend resulting in the wettest year on record in the United States. Prime farmland across the country continues to struggle with flooding and poor conditions for planting, among other issues including the trade war. As VOA's Kane Faribault reports, farmers are running out of time and options.
This is an unwelcome sight and sound on Megan Dwyer's rural Illinois farm.
Rain, more rain.
That's not good, is it?
It is not.
It has been one of the wettest planting seasons 30-year-old Dwyer has ever experienced.
We picked up another 0.8 last night and probably 3 or 4 this morning. Ideally, we'd like to be done planting corn, have a good chunk of our beans in, and we're maybe 5% planted in total right now.
At the end of May, Illinois farmers had about 35% of their crops planted, a dramatic contrast to an average of 95% most years at the same time. Megan Dwyer is among many nationwide who have to make a decision soon. Plant very late and hope it grows in time, or...
Or you've got the preventive plant option as well, where you just don't put a crop in at all.
The prevented plant option is a crop insurance claim payout meant to help farmers deal with the loss of income due to poor planting weather, an option that is rarely used.
People are trying to figure out how they're going to make some money this year, how they're going to be able to pay the bills.
Illinois Farm Bureau National Legislative Director Adam Nielsen says the continued rainfall is creating a perfect economic storm for those already dealing with 5 consecutive years of negative farm income.
It would be normally a very stressful year to begin with, but then when you add the fact that we're now entering year 2 of a trade war and a lot of our markets are closed off to us, that adds a higher level of anxiety, and that's what our members are feeling.
The recent breakdown in trade negotiations between the United States and China has only added to Megan Dwyer's problems.
60% of our soybeans get exported. For us, 2/3 of our soybeans, so more than that. And our end user is China. There's a lot of uncertainty around where this product's going to go. The rain on top of that is with the flooding and not being able to get barges and river traffic through. You know, nobody can even move the product even if there was a buyer. So it's pretty scary and uncertain times.
President Donald Trump's promise to compensate farmers through another proposed U.S. Department of Agriculture aid package, estimated at $16 billion this year, may provide some relief for farmers.
For me, I don't want it. I'd rather have markets and access to a real place for my product to go.
But Dwyer, like most farmers, is realistically left with little choice but to accept the aid to help make ends meet, to help the farm survive, to plant another day. But with the aid comes stigma.
I've seen several comments that farmers are just looking for welfare. We're looking for that handout. We're ready for the government to, you know, pay for us to do this. And that's not at all what happened. We're doing it so we can put food on our table and have a crop and product to share with the rest of the country and the world.
But before there can be a product to share, there needs to be clear skies and warmth to dry out Dwyer's fields so she can plant. At least in the short term, the weather forecast isn't giving Dwyer much hope. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Coal Valley, Illinois.
Coming up, enticing Chinese tourists to visit. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news from VOA Asia. Thailand has toughened its penalties for sharing photos and videos of sexual assault as the country grapples with a reported rise in child sex trafficking and a growing crop of webcam centers to exploit it. Rights groups say the Thai legal update may leave some troubling trends largely unchecked. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for more. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, and after nearly a decade of rapid growth, Chinese tourism to the United States has dropped. Faith Lapidus tells us tourism destinations throughout the country are now scrambling to reverse the trend.
San Francisco's Fisherman's Wharf is a popular tourist site and a unique spot to see wildlife. But even the barking of the resident sea lions isn't enough to distract some tourists from bigger issues, like friction from the trade war, travel warnings, and the Trump administration's immigration policies.
My friends, they heard about Trump and his policies. You know, people talk to me about the sanctuary cities. Is he going to block us out using a wall, or is he going to transport us to some cities that, I don't know. Like, people are concerned.
According to the National Travel and Tourism Office, after more than a decade of rapid growth, travel from China to the United States last year fell nearly 6% to 2.9 million visitors. Because Chinese tourists are one of the biggest group of foreign nationals visiting the U.S. and spend billions while they're here, The American hospitality industry is pulling out all the stops to make them feel welcome. The Intercontinental Hotels Group has employees who speak Mandarin and Cantonese and offers tea service in the rooms. They also serve special Chinese breakfasts. When tourism officials in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, noticed Chinese bus tours coming from Chicago to the Harley-Davidson Museum, they translated brochures into Chinese and even went to a Beijing trade show where they were the only American city represented. In San Francisco, Simcoe Restaurants added Alipay, a popular mobile payment method in China, and Mandarin menus.
Family style is a lot of the way they like to eat, so they'll order big platters with lobster, crab, mussels, clams, and share and pick at it and really have a nice dining experience.
While U.S.-China trade is stuck in a political debate, U.S. businesses are doing all they can to keep the stream of Chinese visitors flowing freely. Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
This news from VOA Asia, a powerful government investigation into a worsening crystal methamphetamine epidemic in Australia is to examine its impact on Aboriginal communities. Crystal meth, known in Australia as ice, is highly addictive. Users can suffer paranoia and hallucinations, as well as stroke and heart failure. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the Trump administration has renewed a push to overhaul America's often criticized immigration system. Amid an accelerating surge of Central American migrants and asylum seekers arriving at the U.S.-Mexico border, in one effort to end illegal immigration, President Trump tweeted last week the United States would begin imposing a rising tariff on Mexican imports until illegal migrants stop trying traveling through the country to reach America. On the congressional front, VOA's Michael Bowman reports that bipartisanship on possible reforms remains scarce and could even be harder to muster after a recent White House personnel announcement.
The Trump administration says migrant arrivals now top 100,000 a month, producing a staggering total since the start of the government's fiscal year last October.
As of April 30th, we apprehended 460,294 people on the southern border. Nearly half of the adults we apprehended in April brought children. They have received the message loud and clear: bring a child, you will be released.
President Donald Trump responded with a plan to tighten asylum standards and discourage border arrivals.
Legitimate asylum seekers are being displaced by those lodging frivolous claims.
Trump also wants to continue border wall construction and implement a so-called merit-based immigration system that prioritizes highly skilled newcomers. Democrats are not impressed.
Merit. It is really a condescending word. They're saying family is without merit.
He opts for a border wall, something that only serves to bolster his ego and irrevocably harm our border communities.
No plan can pass without bipartisan support in the politically divided Congress. Trump repeatedly has goaded Democrats on the issue.
Democrats are proposing open borders, lower wages, and frankly, lawless chaos.
And at political rallies, he speaks bluntly about newcomers to America.
Our country is full. We don't want people coming up here.
Trump recently named former Virginia State Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli as the White House's immigration czar or coordinator. Cuccinelli once argued police may check the immigration status of anyone they stop on the road.
Cuccinelli is a hardliner on immigration. He does share the president's points of view.
Democrats abhor Cuccinelli's unflinching advocacy of staunchly conservative views, potentially making it even harder for the administration to attract Democratic support for its immigration proposals, with Cuccinelli spearheading the effort. For now, few see any hope of bipartisan consensus on immigration.
I'd say the chances are less than zero, if that's possible.
We need the wall.
What makes it so tough is that it has become an ideological issue dividing the two parties.
We have a lot of disagreements here.
Trump talks about immigration as if it's going to ruin America. And there are other people who talk about immigration as absolutely the fundamental bedrock of America.
Some U.S. lawmakers are focused on addressing the immediate situation on the U.S.-Mexico border.
This is a crisis. It's going to get worse.
I encourage my colleagues to set aside their hatred for President Trump and work to address the crisis at the border.
Others want more encompassing legislation.
The smartest thing we could do would be actually do comprehensive immigration reform, and God willing, someday we'll get back and do that.
Contentious legislation rarely becomes law in an election year. With the 2020 campaigns already heating up, the window for action on immigration shrinks by the day. Michael Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you.
Muslims in the U.S. state of Alaska face nearly 20 hours of daylight during the fasting month of Ramadan. VOA Hausa reporter Yusuf Harande went to Alaska to see how some Muslims are adjusting to those long days.
This time of the year in Alaska, the sun shines nearly all day. During Ramadan, that is a challenge for Sadiku Muhammad's family.
Fasting in Alaska is amazing. The sun rises at about 4 o'clock a.m. and sets at around midnight. As such, we fast from 4 a.m. till 12 a.m. I have never fasted for more than 12 hours in my life.
Muhammad's mother, Hajja Serena, says Ramadan fasting is easier in Alaska than in the heat of West Africa.
The weather here is cool, so I can fast without even eating anything. I don't feel hungry at all. But in Ghana, due to the heat, you will be eager to break the fast. Since I have been fasting here, I have never worried about how long it is.
Some Muslims in Alaska observe fasting based on the daylight hours in Mecca to compensate for how much daylight can vary here so close to the earthic circle. Atu Chaudhry worships at the Islamic Center of Fairbanks.
And in summer, the days could be here could be as long as 21 hours. In December, the days could be only as long as 3 hours. So we've been told by, not me, by our scholars, to follow a standard time zone, and mashallah, what we do, we stick to the time frame of Mecca, which is our holiest place. We stay fast from 4 in the morning to almost 7 in the afternoon. We breakfast and we do the routine things. We pray 5 times, just like any other type people do.
Chaudhry's wife, Zakia, says Ramadan in Alaska is not so different from Ramadan in Bangladesh.
Whatever we do back home, we also do here. We eat suhoor, we eat iftar, we fast the whole day, and we sometimes spend time with the community that we also do back home. The only thing we miss here is that back home, a lot of Muslims around the neighborhood.
So, Muslims here says they do best they can. Hasib Ali moved to Alaska from Sudan.
We cannot match the way we do Ramadan home. One of these traditions is the joyness or the enjoyments of Ramadan during night times and not working during daytime. Here there is no way you cannot go to work in the right time, the right place. However, we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to accept our intention of fasting according to Alaska's time, which we break the fast and the sun is still there.
In a state 3 times the size of Nigeria, Muslims in Alaska says they are fulfilling their traditions in the ways they honor their community and their faiths. Yusuf Aliyu Harande for VOA News, Fairbanks, Alaska.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can find us all over the place online. Of course, VOA Asia Facebook and VOAnews.com. That's our website. You can hear us on the radio throughout Asia on great radio stations like Helps Radio at Help University in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. Thanks to everyone there who's tuned in today. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zainab Abdel-Rahman, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. Have a great day.